on today's Run to the Top podcast.
We all have the ability to be our best selves, but to take what we do and diminish our own achievements because we compare them to others, it's doing ourselves such a disservice. One can be certainly inspired by what others are doing in social media. Don't compare your story to others. Do you?
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome, this is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. On today's podcast, we have two women who are longtime friends, runners, and have collectively run the Boston Marathon 25 years total. Meet Julie Sapper and Lisa Reichman of Run Farther and Faster, a company they started in 2009. Julie and Lisa ran in the deluge in Boston this year and will share that experience with us, along with many other years that they have crossed the finish line of this world-renowned race. Do you have a story you would like to share on this podcast, or do you know someone who has a story to share? Run to the Top podcast features regular people and professional runners. Anything to do with running works. Please contact us at runnersconnect.net, our website, and use the contact information to get in touch. Many of our interviews have come through your suggestions. Please get in touch with us through the runnersconnect.net website. Who knows? You may be our next featured interview. So let's get started with brief introductions of both Julie Sapper and Lisa Reichman, and then launch into their stories in their own words. Shortly after meeting in 2009, Julie Sapper and Lisa Reichman formed the Washington, D.C. area run club called Run Farther and Faster. Coach Lisa is an RRCA certified running coach, an accomplished distance runner, multi-sport athlete, and mother of three. In November 2016, she was inducted into the Bender JCC of Greater Washington Sports Hall of Fame. She was named the 2015 Masters 40 and over Female Runner of the Year by the Montgomery County Road Runners Club, and was the Open Under 40 Female Runner of the Year in 2010. Lisa is a top-ranked age group runner in the D.C. metropolitan area and has raced as an elite athlete at the Ing New York City Marathon and the SunTrust National Marathon. She has completed over 30 marathons, including 15 Boston marathons, and is also a duathlon and triathlon competitor. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much. We're excited to be here today.
Me too. I'm excited to talk with you. Julie Sapper is a level 2 RRCA certified running coach, 10-time Boston Marathon finisher, mom of two, and a part-time lawyer. She is a ranked age group runner in the DC metropolitan area with frequent top age group wins in races of all distances. While Julie loves training and racing, her first love is helping runners achieve new goals that once seemed unimaginable. In addition to coaching adults of all levels, Julie coaches co-ed youth running programs for her local elementary school. Julie is a Columbus, Ohio native and a graduate of Indiana University School of Business and American University Washington College of Law. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm delighted to have you both. And we did have some technical stuff we had to overcome, but there was a lot of laughing and trying there. And now I think we've got it all to work. So I'm going to start with four basic questions for each of you. And let's start with you, Julie, and then we'll move over to Lisa. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
I am 45 years old, and I was born in Columbus, Ohio, where I also grew up until I went to college. Great town. And where I live now is Rockville, Maryland, which is a suburb outside of the Washington, D.C. area. And my favorite distance to race is the 10 miler. And the reason is because it's long enough that you actually have to train for it. So you see a progression and set a goal, but it's short enough that there's a decent recovery where you can race something else relatively soon. Also, it's long enough that if you should make a mistake during your race, you can still make up for the mistake a few miles later and still have a relatively decent time.
That's a really good point. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, Lisa, now it's your turn. How old are you? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race distance?
As of a few days ago, I am 44 years old. I was born in Westerly, Rhode Island, which is a town just outside of Connecticut, where I grew up until I was four. I live now in Gaithersburg, Maryland, just a few miles away from Julie. And my favorite race distance is the marathon. I love the mental challenge of the marathon. I love the feeling of accomplishment from completing a marathon. So that is definitely my favorite race distance.
All right. So let's move on to the Boston Marathon. I know I am so curious to hear from you, and I'm sure our listeners are as well. Lisa, would you talk about what it was like running the Boston Marathon this year?
This was I use the word epic to describe this year. When I came home, people said, was it horrible? Was it terrible? Was it the worst thing ever? And I just said, it was epic. It was really, both of us have run this wonderful, amazing marathon so many times. And every year it's always a wild card. What is the weather going to be like? And this year I always said my nightmare weather would be rain or wind or really cold. And we got that in spades this year. We had the perfect trifecta. And as it got closer and closer and we realized that forecast wasn't changing, we really had to figure out what could we control and what were we going to do about it. So it was just deal with it. We had to figure out what we were going to do and make the best of it.
Yeah, I would think, and Julie, please chime in on this, that the pre-race time when you were just hanging out waiting for the race to start must have been really challenging, because what clothes do you keep with you? How do you stay warm? How soon after the race started did you both get to run? Julie, talk about that first. Were you in the same corral?
I was in a different wave than Lisa. I was in wave three. So Lisa started 20 minutes before I did, and I started at 10:50. But it really didn't matter because we all were in the same boat. And literally, it was like a boat because Hopkinton, where the buses let us off, was so wet. And we felt very fortunate in that we have experienced the race so many times that we were able to sort of plan in advance our logistics a bit better than if this had been our first time. And with the camaraderie of all the runners we were with from Montgomery County, Maryland, we all put our heads together and realized that the best strategy for waiting for the race to start was to get to Hopkinton as early as possible so that we could secure a warm, relatively warm and dry spot in the tents. So that's what we did. We boarded the first buses, even if our wave time was later, to ensure that we could be warm and dry. And everyone had contributed sort of different elements, but would be the best outfit to wear pre-race. We saw all kinds of things in Hopkinton, but what we chose to do was we chose to order motorcycle rain suits from Amazon. And we also suggested that our runners order these as well. And they were so effective. Lisa found those on Amazon and it was just a brilliant purchase. So we looked like...
What were they?
They were bright yellow motorcycle rain suits.
Oh my gosh.
So we looked like the Gorton fishermen. Remember that old commercial of the Gorton fishermen?
Totally.
We looked like them, but it was dry. And then underneath we just layered so much stuff, but we also brought with us a lot of different things that normally we wouldn't race in. For example, latex gloves. We wore those underneath our gloves to keep our fingers as warm as possible. We also used a lot of different lotions to barrier between our skin and the rain to ensure that we didn't get chafed or to do the best we could to prevent chafing. And along with our fellow runners from Montgomery County, we brought shoes with us that we carried, our running shoes, and then I wore hiking boots. And I was so grateful to have those boots because my feet were relatively dry when I started the race, and of course they got wet as soon as I started running. I was so grateful to have had the experience to know sort of what to do to ensure that I was at least starting the race in the best way possible. And at least mentally, that helped me not be as nervous as maybe I would have otherwise.
Now, Lisa, talk about this a little bit more. Do you leave your gear then in the tent or in a bus, or, you know, how does that go? Because obviously you're not running with all of that stuff. And another question related to that is, were there like black garbage bags all over the place when people started running, or, you know, was it hard to move around things?
That's actually an interesting question. And what, how you bring your gear to Hopkinton and what you can leave there and what you can bring back has changed so much over the years. And especially after 2013, right, when higher security was enacted, we really aren't supposed to bring anything to Hopkinton. You're limited to a small plastic gallon Ziploc baggie for your food and a fanny pack that can fit around your waist. They were a little bit more lenient this time in letting people bring bags, clear bags with their shoes.
Uh-huh.
So you do, though, assume you're going to be leaving everything in Hopkinton. So our purchase that we made on Amazon of our motorcycle rain suits, which were windproof and waterproof to 80 miles per hour. So we figured we'd be safe with those. We knew we'd be leaving those in Hopkinton. Everything is donated. So there are a lot of plastic bags around for donations. So as you head to the start corrals, there are many, many big trash bags that are marked for donations. So we kind of stopped before we got to the start line. I stopped under the gas station that's right at the corner of the start corrals with a bunch of other people and started shedding as many layers as we were willing to shed at that point and putting them in the bags. But interestingly enough, most people kept their own personal trash bags on them to go to the start. And usually you see that and then people pull them off and they throw them to the side as they get started. Most people wore those the entire race. And people didn't keep them on. I saw asking spectators, picking them up off the ground to put them on later because it really, you needed that extra barrier. And what was really interesting was the last turn, you know, you take a right on Hereford, a left on Boylston, and that right and the left were littered with trash bags, plastic trash bags everywhere, right and left. And I thought, why are all these trash bags? People were finally taking off their trash bags in the last, you know, 0.3 mile for the pictures coming through the finish line, but they didn't take those off. We really, you know, people didn't shed those. You saw, you know, Des Linden had a rain jacket on at the finish line. We decided to wear our jackets. People kept those extra barrier on. So while usually, yes, we discard everything or, you know, it's donated at the start area, and you just assume that, you know, Julie and I always have fun every year buying something to keep us warm at the start that we're willing to part with and donate. And, you know, 1 year it was leopard spotted footy pajamas. we haven't even gotten to wear
unicorn.
Unicorn, yes. Unicorn footed pajamas. Yeah. Footed pajamas have been great because those
so
keep
cool.
you warm
yeah.
at the start. But we also look for the bargain. You know, we could shop Goodwill or shop for bargains that we don't mind discarding. But this year, most people kept a lot of that on for much longer than normal.
I bet. Wow. So how did this weather and situation affect your times? And both of you can talk to that. Just take turns.
This is Julie. And I think for me, what I realized within a few days of seeing the forecast was that any plans that I had for racing Boston in the way I wanted to race this year would be thrown out the window.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because we can only control so much. And my race plan changed from trying to target something in the 320s to trying to, at my best, requalify for Boston, which for me is anything around a 345 to 350. And so my plans changed in the sense that I recognized that it would not be a great idea for me to go out there and try to race against a headwind. But at the same time, I worked hard this season, and I certainly didn't want to go out there and not try. So
right.
I developed a B/C goal for myself that I felt was reasonably attainable, while at the same time being realistic and understanding that just finishing this race would be an adventure and a great story. And also recognizing that if something was going on with my body that was not right, I needed to exercise common sense and good judgment and get off the course, because we're all in this to have fun and be healthy. If there was something that would cause me to not be in a healthy place, then I needed to get off the course.
Yeah.
This is Lisa. And I very similarly to Julie, I knew both of us, I think I can speak for both of us, we're not cold weather runners. Some people love running in the cold and the rain, and they would prefer 30 degrees to 70 degrees. You know, we both ran in 2012 when it was very hot. And while we had to adjust our race plans that year as well due to the heat, I think we were both much happier with that than this. So going into it, I knew I have Raynaud's, where it's an autoimmune disorder where my fingers and my toes feel frozen in, you know, very easily in the cold. And I knew that that was going to be a factor. And my muscles really just don't feel like they're working well. So I went into it giving myself also permission to, you know, just finish thinking that this is going to be a victory. I started the race, and when my wave started, it was light rain and light wind. And I started feeling pretty good. I said, I'm going to start out and just see how I feel and what pace I fall into.
Right.
And I felt pretty close into my pace that I was going to target. So I said, well, let me see, you know, how long I can keep this up, knowing the cold was going to be a factor. And I'll tell you, at about halfway through, about a little bit past Wellesley, my muscles felt like I had run two marathons. So wow. I knew my muscles were fatiguing from the cold. My legs were very, very cold. And I knew that my muscles were fatiguing very much, much faster than normal. So at that point, I started dialing back the pace a little bit, knowing I still had a long way to go, and also to go through the hills, through Newton. I knew I had a lot, the hardest part of the race. So that's when I started dialing back the pace and said, all right, let's take it back a little bit and adjusting as I went based on if we were going through a huge downpour and it was just freezing cold headwinds, I had to slow it down a little. If it, you know, there was a mile where it let up a little bit, I could pick it up a little bit. But really at that point it was, you know, the muscles were feeling fatigued and I knew I was going to have to dial the pace back a bit. I think both Julie and I ended up finishing about 15 minutes off where we would have ideally liked to have been. And that seems to be a lot of, you know, a lot of people I spoke to, plenty of people, there are people who had PRs. There are people who finished faster than they thought they would have, but a lot of people, a lot of our runners that we work with, that we coach, also had about, you know, 15, 20 minute difference from what they would have really ideally liked with ideal conditions.
Yeah. And you two had both run the race so many times that you had a good sense of what you were capable of, you know, the finer tuning you get into than the more something like the weather at this particular Boston would impact what you were capable of. Cause you know, I think we always assume that we're for our best performance, we're going to try for certain optimum conditions. And that definitely wasn't the case at Boston this year. And
that's correct. This is Julie. And to echo Lisa's sentiments, when I started the race, even though I said in my head, I'm going for my BC goal, it didn't feel that bad initially. Like Lisa said, it wasn't terrible. And I started getting a little bit cocky initially. I was like, oh, I can sustain this. This is fine. Uh-huh. And I'd say around mile, I want to say 15 or 16, like right after Wellesley, which is by far the most fun, lively part of the race, I felt like my body was shutting down. And wow. I looked at my watch because I thought, I think I'm going a little fast. My heart rate feels high. And I went from doing a nice 8:10 pace to a 10:30. And at that moment, I realized that I needed something. And I was running with my good friend, Ken, and he looked at me and said, you need to keep going because if you stop, you're going to get hypothermia. I grabbed some electrolytes and somehow I pulled myself together. But I think that was my body shutting down from just trying to keep warm and
totally
not being able to sustain that pace. So yeah, the wind definitely was a lot more powerful than initially I realized.
Now, what did you two do about nutrition? Because that would be another consideration was what, you know, you've mentioned the lack of energy, the muscles cramping, the things that would happen when you just weren't feeding your body or your body was having to respond so drastically to the weather. Did you change your nutrition plan? And when you did nourish your body, did that seem to help you be able to move on?
That's a great question. This is Lisa, and this was actually a huge factor for me. And I knew going into the race because of the way my fingers get in cold temperatures that I was going to have difficulty feeding myself, getting my nutrition out. And so I came up with the most, what I thought was the easiest way. And Julie will tell you about her her strategy, but I thought I would split all of my chews. I had about 60 chews, and I split them into, I think, about 6 baggies of 10 each. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And I put them in very easily accessible pockets down the sides of my pants that didn't have zippers or anything. Typically, I keep it in a zippered pouch and bring it out. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to operate zippers. So I thought I need to make it as easy as possible for myself to get this nutrition in, recognizing my fingers may not be working. And I took out the first baggie, and I could tell immediately I couldn't even, the bag was open, but I couldn't even get anything out. So I started using my teeth to rip the baggie and try to suck Wow. suck the chews out. Mm-hmm. And I was successful for about 5 of them. And then I really, honestly, I gave up. I couldn't do it. It was wasting energy. It was frustrating me. And when I would go to the water stops to try to grab a water, my hand again wouldn't work. It would fall right through my hand, and I couldn't get water well. I had to stop at a couple of the water stops and put both hands on the cup, and in one case ask the volunteer to help me get it to my mouth.
Wow.
And I really think in the course of the race, I probably had about 8 chews yeah. and two sips of water. And wow. that was clearly, you were very perceptive to say that all what we were talking about is also signs of not being properly fueled or hydrated for a distance run like this. And yeah. that is definitely a factor for me.
Yeah. Now, Julie, how about you?
So I, like Lisa, I use Honey Stinger chews, and I really like having sustained energy. I'm not someone that responds very well to taking a gel or chews every 45 minutes, but mm-hmm. rather I like regularly taking energy throughout the race. So I typically take in 4 chews every 15 minutes throughout okay. a marathon. So uh-huh. I took 60 chews and put them in one Ziploc and put them inside my bra. And I left the bag open, and I would just go in and dive in every 15 minutes and take 4 chews. And it worked for me.
Wow.
For
a while. What did your skin feel like? I mean, it must have been pretty gooey, sticky.
No, I had so many, it was like just under my jacket. If I can describe this, how do I say this? A little in my cleavage. And it worked very well. I mean, it was probably, the stingers seemed to be a little waterproof, because I'm telling you, those things work really well. And if anyone runs a race in the rain and needs fuel, Honey Stinger chews seem to work, and they don't melt or anything or get too gooey in the rain. But in any case, that was working. That system was working for me until about, like I mentioned earlier, a mile after Wellesley. I just felt my body shutting down, which meant that I needed more than just my regular yeah. nutrition plan. And I ended up supplementing with some Clif gels. Those are given out on the course, and my buddy had some too. And I've taken those before, so I wasn't trying anything new on race day.
Right.
But typically, I don't need those in addition to the Honey Stinger. And just one gel on the Honey Stingers helped me tremendously. I seemed to recover and replenish some of that lost glycogen. And I just think my body was working a lot harder than usual to stay warm, which translated to needing more calories than normal for a marathon like this.
Totally. Well, I want to congratulate both of you for, you know, this epic run that you did and the mental strength that it took to be able to finish it and to work through all of the adversity that you had. I do want to ask you about Boston in the bombing year. Were you both there?
Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
We were together.
Is that right? You were running together. And so were you in relation to the bombing itself?
This is Lisa. We had both finished, and our friends in our running group meet up at a bar restaurant after Fire and Ice, which is not far from the finish line at all. And we were all gathering there after the race. And so we had finished, most of us had finished, but we were still waiting for runners to come in. And I remember distinctly I had to go back to my hotel at 3 o'clock to shower so I could make it to my flight was leaving that evening. So I left the restaurant at about 3 o'clock and walked out the door away from the finish line. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't heard anything. But as I was leaving, I was on the phone with my father talking to him about my race. And he was back at home here in the DC area. And as we're talking, sirens just going by, I saw, you know, fire engines, ambulances going by me. And he said, it's so loud. What's going on there? And I said, I don't know. I said, I wonder if somebody had a heart attack at the finish line, or, you know, they're all right. headed toward the finish line. But
right.
I said, I'm, you know, walking away from the finish line. I'm going to my hotel. And he said, all right, well, you know, we'll talk later. And I got off the phone with him. And as soon as I hung up, the woman next to me said, did you hear it? And I said, hear what? And she said the explosions. And even then, it didn't register with me. I thought maybe there was a speaker that exploded at the finish line or, sure. You know, that's not something you think about. And yeah. As we're walking back in the direction of my hotel and we're starting to see more panic and get more information, I thought I better call I hadn't spoken to my mother yet. I said, I better call her and let her know that, you know, I'm okay. And I called her quickly and got through. And I said that I don't know what's going on here, but seems like something's going on. I just want you to know I'm safe. I'm walking back to my hotel. And she said, well, let me turn on the news and see if anything's on. And she turned on CNN and she said, I don't see anything. And we had a brief conversation. And right before we hung up, she said, wait, they just came on CNN, says, you know, two explosions in Boston. And she was kind of feeding me the news from there. And I said, I better call my husband who's picking up my kids from school. And he knew I had finished and I had spoken to him already after I'd finished the race. But I said, I better let him know that I'm not in the area and I'm safe. And by then you couldn't get a call out after right. I got off the phone with my mom. It was text and Facebook messages and that sort of communication. So I could text him and let him know I was, you know, safe and walking back to the hotel. But that news trickled in and it was, you know, Julie can tell you too. She her family was there, not with us, but they were there, had been watching the marathon. So it was a very scary, scary time.
Oh my gosh. So Julie, fill us in on the details of your experience.
My experience was like Lisa, I was in the bar and I was trying to just get in touch with my husband. I knew I had seen my husband and kids at mile 22 and they were going to head home. They were driving home that night. So I knew that they were somewhere, but I wasn't sure where. And when I saw on TV from the bar what was happening, even though we'd hear the sirens, like Lisa, we didn't make the connection until we saw it on the news. I couldn't get in touch with anyone in my family. Oof. And so someone came up with a very smart idea to post on Facebook, hello, I'm with the following individuals, and tag all of the people that she was with.
Yeah.
So that allowed everyone to see that we were safe.
Yeah.
And my husband was at a rest stop. He stopped when he heard, he stopped with the kids and he saw the post. And then he was able to call everyone in my family and let them know that I was safe. And I missed my flight out that night as a result. And I just really was moved by the kindness, the sheer capability of the people in Boston, the first responders, the way they treated all of the runners who were just not sure what to do. And it was just mobilizing people, making sure that the city was safe, but yet at the same time, giving respect to people who were scared and nervous and understanding that there were a lot of people out there that while didn't show visible signs of trauma, certainly had emotional signs. And the city of Boston is like no other. It truly is Boston strong. And I always loved the race, but after 2013, I truly fell in love with the city even more. And I have so much respect for the city and the people of Boston.
And now, have you run it since then? Have you run it every year since then?
Yes. I have, yes.
Really, I'm sorry.
Julie, I missed 1 year in 2015 due to an injury, and I recovered, and I wanted so badly to be back in 2016 that I ran a little race outside of Chicago called The Last Chance to BQ so that I could secure a BQ in time to get back in 2016. Because I, like Lisa, I am privileged enough to usually get to requalify at Boston the year before. And so I made a point to try and run a race so that I could run it again in 2016. And it was really wonderful to be back in 2016. But I think Lisa would agree that running it in 2014, the year after the bombings, was like no other. It was such a special year and a year of healing. And Meb won that year. And the spirit of the city was just indescribable.
Yeah, that's really they're such an awful thing, but a lot of hope and strength and goodness came out of how it mobilized the people and also the 2014 race. So much support for getting back out there and continuing with the Boston Marathon. I did want to ask you one or the other. Actually, one of you can take this question. Ranked runners. I know that, you know, that's not something that a lot of us are involved in. So could one of you explain what a ranked runner is?
Sure. This is Lisa. Our local in the just the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, we have a couple actually resources here, a couple publications that rank runners based on your results in local races. They actually don't take into account if we run Boston, that's not part of it. Their goal is to really recognize actually runners who run consistently year round strong. So Run Washington magazine is one of the top local publications that ranks runners, and they have some qualifications for the ranking. You have to run a certain number throughout the year. So some in the first part of the year, some in the second part of the year, and they have to be local and they're different distances, and they use those results to score runners.
Oh, okay.
So you're scored basically against your age group, against all other in your gender, but also in subsets against your age group. So,
and what are the age groups? Are they 5-year or 10-year age groups?
They are, depending on the racepacket.com is one of the other sources that, or now it's actually, I think, Potomac River Running, but there are a couple ranking systems, but the main one, Run Washington, is 10-year age groups.
Okay. Yeah. That's definitely tough when you're, you know, when you're 39, for example.
We're always both very grateful to roll over into the next age group, whether it be I'm 44 and I'm really ready to be in that 45 age group. And I think we both were very eager to get into the master's age group when we were 39. We were ready to be in that 40 age group.
Now, Julie, question for you. Do you have any tips for us on best marathon training techniques?
Absolutely. I think first and foremost is recognizing that there is no one size fits all training plan for a marathon. Everyone is different. Everyone responds to marathon training differently. And while a Hansen's plan or something like that, where you run 3 days a week, but run fast paces might work for someone, that may cause someone else to be injured. So I think it's important to recognize your strengths and weaknesses and look at marathon training based on what you can do. I think one consistent thing that we see as coaches that leads to successful marathons is consistent running. Speed work is sort of like if you have an ice cream sundae, the foundation is the ice cream. Just running the miles is the ice cream. That's important. You add a little whipped cream, that's the speed workouts. The cherry could be some tempo workouts. And while the speed, the tempo, the pickups, all those things can add to the layers and make one a more successful marathoner, really the basis and what we see over and over is higher mileage, not high, but high for that individual. And recognizing that the pace must be conversational, not all the time. Certainly there's different pacing practices, but if you go out and run all of your runs too fast, it will not lead to a successful marathon performance.
Yeah, because you can't run 26.2 or 25 miles at a marathon pace on a regular basis and survive. You know, you're going to get injured. And if you do run at that kind of pace, at your marathon pace, or even slower, then the purpose would be literally to just get your legs conditioned to being on them for so, so long. Lisa,
correct.
What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. I agree with everything Julie said, and especially with the point that everyone is very different and has kind of an optimal training approach. You know, with our older runners, we're older ourselves, but as we get older, we see that we need more recovery. And really it is that consistency and getting in the mileage and getting that time in on your feet to build that endurance, because the marathon is all about endurance. And tempo work we find to be really helpful because that's raising your lactate threshold and raising the the highest sustainable effort that you can run longer.
Yeah.
And you can work longer efforts at tempo pace than you can at, you know, super fast, you know, 5K intervals or faster intervals. We like Julie said too, the speed work for us is sort of, it's sharpening. It's that cherry on top. And with the speed work that we do with marathon, we tend to focus on more speed development and, you know, maybe some short 200 meter fast intervals to improve running economy, because that's something else that's really important in a marathon is if you're not efficient and you're not economical, you're going to get tired very fast. So that's what we found, is that those long, that high mileage, but because you, like you said, if you're running high mileage, you can't be running it all super fast. It's just getting in that time on your feet and some of that tempo work, and then some work on running efficiency and economy. We look at runners' cadence to make sure their cadence looks good. So that seems to be what is most most successful for ourselves, for our runners, but really that, again, that consistency, the runners we see that have, that are setting the PRs, that are feeling great at the end of the race, that are picking it up and finishing strong, are those that just got in all the workouts. And maybe one day they said, I couldn't get to the track and do that speed workout, but I just did it, you know, 7 miles easy instead. They just got it all in. And those are the people who really are able to reach their potential.
Yeah. Establishing that base is a really important part of running a marathon too. Just having your body know what it feels like to be pounding the pavement for hour after hour after hour.
And not Definitely. Just their body, but their minds yeah. as well. And that's something we see we really need to work on with a lot of our marathon runners is the mental aspect. And that's what I had mentioned at the beginning. Why I like the marathon is it's very mental. I was exhausted mentally at the end of this year's Boston because it was such a mental challenge. But really any marathon, you've got to be able to approach it with a positive mental attitude. And so that's a big part of it as well.
Totally.
This is Julie. I just wanted to add more layer to it. And this is especially important with masters runners, and that is strength training. It doesn't have to be a formal, I'm going to the gym for an hour to lift type of strength training, but just like Runners Connect talks about quite a bit, fitting those critical core strength exercises in on a regular basis, that's what really helps runners sustain good form and really muscle through the end of a marathon is having that strength and power, which can be achieved through strength training.
Totally. Oh, I love that you brought that up. Now, I do have a question about what made you to decide to partner in a running business.
I can take this one, Lisa.
Sure.
We met in 2009 through a mutual friend. She set us up, and we both coincidentally, without knowing each other, were obtaining our coaching certifications, and we had so much in common. We both were lawyers by trade and decided to become running coaches and considered ourselves crazy mother runners and had kids around the same age. And it was just very natural that we each had little coaching gigs that we had obtained after receiving our certifications. I was working for a local parks and rec department doing a class, and Lisa similarly was working for the local JCC doing a class, and we decided to help each other. And then after a year of helping each other with those two classes, we decided to go out on our own and start Run Farther and Faster. We had a small group of runners to start, all of whom we still connect with regularly. And we trained for a half marathon in our area, a wonderful half marathon called the Parks Half Marathon. And that evolved into what we have now, which is a really wonderful group of runners on Sunday mornings. We do a speed and strength program on Sundays from May until July. Mm-hmm. And then we started virtually coaching runners about 7 years ago. And we love both aspects of our coaching entity, but what we really love is helping people. It's really so rewarding to guide individuals through something that they never imagined they could do. It's just an unbelievable feeling.
It really is. I agree. Did you want to add anything to that, Lisa?
No, I agree. And I think it's been really neat to see how we started this as sort of it was a hobby. We both were runners. We both love running. We wanted to introduce people to running and help them find that joy that we've found in running. And it was sort of a fun thing we did on the side of our other jobs. And it's now grown to, hundreds of runners a year. We could do this full time if we didn't work other jobs. We wish we could do this full time and devote 40 hours a week to it. And it's, and the working together too, we really work well together. I think Julie is an amazing sounding board. I'm always using her to bounce ideas off of. I really respect her perspective, and we just have a really great working relationship. And we've had our kids grow up in the same stages, so we share a lot of that. It's such a nice. People always say if you love what you do, you don't work a day in your life, and that's what we love what we do, and we love who we do it with. So it is a passion of ours, and we're so lucky to be able to do this.
Nice. Well, we are going to change gears here, and it's interesting that you were talking about strength training because we are going to move into the final kick, and that, of course, is part of every podcast that I'm involved in. But Runners Connect has a word for you about strength training and why it's an essential part of any runner's training program.
You know you need it, but are you wondering how to add strength training to your running? You want to know which exercises are going to be most effective to reduce injuries and improve performance so you don't waste your time, right? You need to know how to balance strength work with your current mileage so you don't overtrain, right? Well, check out our free strength training video course at runnersconnect.net/strong. This four-part video course will help you learn how to add strength work to your training the right way to avoid injury and improve performance. Plus, you'll learn how to avoid the five most common mistakes made when you add strength workouts to your running plan. This free course is available at runnersconnect.net/strong.
All right, we are back, and you two have had a chance to understand the final kick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. It's been so much fun for me to add this segment. This actually was started by Tina Muir, but I adapted it to my own questions and kind of moved it slightly in a different direction. But the running, local running areas has been such a wonderful part of the podcast. So let's start with Lisa. What is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough about it that our listeners could come to your city and be able to run there.
We love running with our runners often on a local trail called the Capital Crescent Trail. It is a rail-to-trail project, shared use paved trail that runs from Georgetown in Washington, D.C. to Bethesda in Maryland, not far from where we live. So we often start in Bethesda, which is actually at the 3.5-mile marker of the trail. 3.5 miles of it are on the opposite direction, are actually closed right now, but it goes from 3.5 miles to 11 miles. So it's 8.5 miles into Georgetown. And we meet in downtown Bethesda, and there are several parking garages there, the public parking garages that are free on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And you can get on the trail right at that 3.5 mile marker. Again, it's shared use, so there are always bicyclists out and kids and families and dogs. And so it can get a little crowded, but it's a really nice, it's beautiful, and it leads you right into Georgetown, where you can then go around Washington Harbor. You can go visit the Exorcist Fairs in Georgetown, the famous Exorcist Fairs. You can have brunch in Georgetown and then take a Uber back, or you can, if you've got a long run, you can turn around and come back. And what's nice is that it's paved, it's a trail, it is, you know, closed off to traffic, and there are mile markers along the way. So even if you don't bring your watch, or even if you're, you know, kind of zoning out, you know how far you have gone, and it traverses through Montgomery County, Maryland, and into DC. So that's my favorite route.
Now, what about bathrooms and water along the way?
There are water fountains along the way, and there are a couple places you can dodge off the trail pretty quickly and easily. It crosses over some major intersections where there are some restaurants you can jump off and use the restrooms along the way. But there are water fountains also along the way.
Cool. And Julie, do you have something else you'd like to add to that? Another route?
Another route. There's so many wonderful routes in DC. One that I particularly love is the Mount Vernon Trail. You can take it from Teddy Roosevelt Island, where there's about 80 or 90 parking spaces there. So you park at Teddy Roosevelt Island, which is off of the GW Parkway, and you just hop on to the trail. It's a shared use trail also, and it's paved. And you can take that and run along the Potomac River, and you can see the monuments. And if you run far enough, you end up running all the way to Mount Vernon. And it's so beautiful. And I wish I could run it more, but kids and logistics require me to stay a little closer to home, but it's one of my favorite places to run.
Yeah. Oh, cool. And how about water and bathrooms?
I think you can stop off at bathrooms. There are places to sort of get off and stop, and there is water. I'm not sure how often the fountains are working, but there is water.
Yeah, cool. Okay, well, thank you both. And now on to a recommended running book. Who wants to take that first?
I'm a big fan of Catherine Switzer. So I loved her book, Marathon Woman. Mm-hmm. I met her at the Cherry Blossom Expo, I think probably two years ago now. And I read her book a couple times, actually. I'm inspired by, you know, what she's done and what she continues to do to promote women's running.
Truly. Yeah. Julie, how about you?
I love the book Beyond Grit by Cinder Campoff. That book was featured on a Runners Connect podcast, and Cinder was interviewed, and her book is incredible. And we actually formed a Read Farther and Faster book club around the book this winter, where we had a book group that met on Sundays once a month with a local sports psychologist, where we went through the book. And Cinder's book is great because it provides all kinds of mental tips and ways to be gritty. And it can be applicable to not just running, but to life in general. And I encourage anyone who's looking to be better and stronger mentally to pick up this book. You don't even have to read the whole thing. Each chapter has a nugget of wisdom that you can really carry with you throughout life.
All right. Words of wisdom or humor for our listeners.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Okay. Mine is, it's actually on the back of all of our Run Farther and Faster shirts. And it is a quote by Lowell Thomas, "Do a little more each day than you think you possibly can." And that's what we challenge ourselves to do. That's what we challenge our runners to do, not just in running, but in everything. And it's translated for me from running to everything else I do. Do a little more than you think you possibly can. That's how we grow and how we change.
Totally. All right, Julie.
Mine is a quote from Teddy Roosevelt, "Comparison is the thief of joy."
Oh, and my gosh. Wow. That's pretty terrific, you know. I think we can all learn from that.
Absolutely. I think it's really important that we remember that, because we all have the ability to be our best selves. But to take what we do and diminish our own achievements because we compare them to others, it's doing ourselves such a disservice. And with the proliferation of social media, particularly in running, I think it's important to sort of recognize that while one can be certainly inspired by what others are doing in social media, don't compare your story to others. Do you, and be the best you can. And I think that will bring so much joy. And if everyone can think that way and be happy for others' successes, but also focus on what you can do, I think we can all be our own best selves.
Indeed. Okay. The next one is, any questions for me? And this, you don't have to have one either.
Lisa, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, Julie, did you want to start? I thought we both had, you know, wanted to know, who would you like to, who's your dream, you know, person to interview on your podcast? Is there anybody that you would really like to meet and talk to?
Who would I like to interview?
Who you haven't already.
Yeah, actually.
Besides Lisa Reichman and Julie Chapman. Right.
Desiree right now is really fascinating to me. I'm just so happy for her and what she's accomplished. And I would love to interview her. It brought tears to my eyes when Meb won and also when she won, because, you know, it's like these are almost, well, she especially is pretty unknown, you know, to the world, and then to see her cross that finish line was very touching. And so I'd love to interview her.
Yeah,
we would love for you to interview her too. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing for sure.
My question for you is, I know you started working on this podcast relatively recently.
Yeah.
How have you changed since interviewing all these different runners on the Runners Connect podcast?
Well, I love that question, because I started my own podcast and it's called Active After 35.
I love that.
And it was so rewarding to interview. It's a women's podcast. It's still going on. But it was so, it was like a gift every week to interview these different people and find out about their lives and their interests and their struggles. And so when Jeff Gaudette asked me to host this one, I was so excited, you know, because
yeah,
it's like double gifts, more gifts, give me gifts, you know? And I really feel so blessed to have the opportunity to interview all kinds of people who are connected with fitness and who are connected with running, but from lots of different angles. And you two are perfect examples. You know, it's just every time I interview, I feel like I've been given a gift.
If you mind, I have a quick follow-up. I have a quick follow-up to that. Is there one common characteristic you'd see in all those these masters women that you've interviewed over the years that you think has contributed to their success?
Well, what I have noticed, and not just in the women, but in the men who are older, is how connected they are with humility. It's like they really don't think of themselves as anything, very, very special, you know, and yet they are such great examples for most of us. And that's been even more of a learning experience and something that has humbled me and, you know, and being able to interview them, and they just are so, so human and so real.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Neat.
Yeah. Okay. Now, one final one, and maybe we kind of covered this, and it was, is there someone or some subject about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast? So we've all agreed that Desiree Linden, I think that's her last name. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Linden, yeah.
Yes.
And so she's one that we would all like to hear from. And who else?
Well, that's funny because I think both of ours, I was going to say, I know what Julie was going to say, but I think both of ours are consistent with sort of your theme and who you've interviewed in the past. I don't know if you've ever heard of Madonna Buter, but she is also known as the Iron Nun.
Oh,
and
okay.
She's the oldest woman to complete an Ironman triathlon, but not just one. She's completed, I think, over 40 Ironman triathlons, and she's over, I think she's 85 or 86 years old. And
is
I
she
think
the
that
Canadian
is,
one?
No, she's not. I don't think she's Canadian. Okay. I'm not sure. She's a nun. She's a nun, and she has completed, you know, more Ironman triathlons than most people, I think I would say. And an Ironman triathlon is not an easy feat. You know, if you think a marathon is difficult, you add the 2.4 mile swim and 112 mile bike. And she does that. And that to me is, I would love to hear her secrets to success and how she can, you know, how she accomplishes that major feat.
I love that suggestion. Was she the one who was in the Nike video?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yep. She was in the Nike ad. Yeah.
Yeah. She's pretty amazing. Okay. So I'm going to try and look her up because that would be terrific to talk with her.
And Julie. Has somebody too.
It's funny. Lisa and I did not talk about this before, but we both have sort of similar suggestions. My suggestion is Bennett Beach. He's a local athlete who has set the record for running the Boston Marathon most consecutive times. As of this year, he's run it for 51 years consecutively.
Wow.
And he's a real fascinating guy. And talk about humility. He is so humble, so lovely. And he has witnessed 50 years of Boston history. And I think he would be a fascinating interview.
Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for that. And that was Bennett Beach?
Yes, B-E-A-C-H.
Okay. All right. Well, we're definitely running out of time. There's been so much good conversation back and forth here. Please do give us contact information and how our audience would be able to stay in touch with you.
Sure. You can find us on runfartherandfaster.com, on Instagram, Run Farther and Faster, Facebook, Run Farther and Faster, Twitter, Run Farther Fast. And you can always email us at julieandlisa@runfartherandfaster.com. We have loved talking with you, Stephanie. Thank you so much for having us.
I know. It's been so much fun. Lisa, did you want to add anything to that?
Nope. She got all of our contact information and just wanted to echo that we love listening to your podcast and love listening to all the different guests that you have. And we've been honored to be two of those.
Oh, well, thank you so much for going through this today. And I'm so glad we overcame those initial technology problems. Thank you, audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. And as always, you can follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. Also subscribe to the Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. Julie and Lisa, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's really been special. And thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain you as you head out on your favorite run. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.